Andy?
Yeah, this is him.
Oh, my God.
What's up? You're on with your band.
This is funny, man. I don't think we've all three gotten together in any way or form for many, many years now.
Yeah, this is awesome.
That's really cool. It's like a little reunion. Although
it is, yeah.
It'd probably be way better with instruments.
Yeah.
So what keeps you guys from doing that? What keeps you from ever getting together and just jamming it out?
Well, first of all, distance, I believe, is one factor, but with me being on the other side of the country. But we actually, I mean, the funny thing is I can't remember when it was, like maybe 5 years ago or so. I don't know who had the idea. We were like kind of kicking around, or somebody was kicking around the idea of getting some of the bands together that we would play with in like the early 90s. So like, yeah, so it's not off the table entirely.
That's good to hear. Are you guys all still playing music individually?
Yeah, I still play music, not very often, but I still play drums. Not as much as I used to when I was that age, but yeah.
I actually was playing pretty seriously off and on until about, I want to say, 4 or 5 years ago, when my last band broke up and I went to grad school. So that kind of sidetracked all that. But I held on to my rehearsal studio time. So all my equipment's there, instruments, and I figure it's never going to be as serious as it once was, but I probably will get something together again at some point.
Yeah, the thing about now is it does seem like it's sort of, you know, easier to share stuff with one another,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's easier to get your music out there now.
Mm-hmm. It was,
out there than it was back in the day. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, definitely.
but putting a band together is still always a challenge. And
yes.
And even more than that, keeping a band together and rehearsing frequently gets harder and harder the older you get.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah, definitely.
So,
yeah, I think so go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I just kind of making me think, like, yeah, my last band, you know, I think we kind of broke up because of adulting, because, just certain different career and school things going on for my guitarist and my drummer, which then prompted me to do the same, but yeah, it really, it's hard to do.
Well, what got you guys together originally? How did you come together as a band?
Ooh, that's
a
long...
Ben should take that one.
Yeah, that's a long story.
Yeah.
To kind of, I guess to sum it up, when I was a freshman in high school, I met Lily through her younger sister, who was my age, because she was starting a band, and... we had a band and did that for a little while. And through that band, another guitar player in that band I started playing with after that band broke up, and we were searching for a drummer, and I put the general, ad on the bulletin board at the music store where I took guitar lessons, looking for a drummer. Trying to start a band that had influences from Sex Pistols, Ramones, Sonic Youth, and Bad Brains, which was pretty much what everyone put. And we found Andy, who was a little bit younger than me and John, but we tried him out, and he just kind of kicked ass, and that's how we started. And then John moved on, and we got Lily into the band, and the band kind of started to take off then. The three of us kind of had a pretty good chemistry and started writing more serious stuff and writing stuff that we felt was ready to start getting out there and like trying to get shows and stuff with.
Yeah.
Andy,
that sounds about right.
What was your first impression when you came in to jam with those guys?
Well, like Ben said, I mean, it started with me and him, and then yeah, there was like another bass player who moved away, and I mean, I'd never played in a band before, so that was cool. I mean, you know, it was cool to just get in a room with any individuals that could play anything at all. It was awesome, and because particularly like, I mean, they were a little bit older than me too, so that was like kind of neat for me to just kind of play up a little bit. And you know, these people were spitting out bands that I had no idea who they were, you know, just like, okay, cool, let's check that out or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I think that was really cool. And then once that guy moved away and Lily came into the picture and we started playing for a while, and you know, like any band, you have to play for a while to like really get good and kind of feel comfortable writing your own songs and all that. And we've kind of been pretty blessed the past couple weeks to have like Ben find all these old recordings for us and have to go back and listen to them. And I mean, yeah, I've been really blown away by them and how even the bad ones that are like our first recordings that we ever did, like just something that we just wrote and did and recorded somewhere, how that progressed from like our last recordings to like a band that was like, this actually sounds really together and really thought out and way better than I would ever remember my teenage self coming up with a song ever. Like, like, and it's kind of, it's made me really proud actually of it. And so I actually think, yeah, I think those, yeah, just I, something gelled very well with like me and Ben and Lily and yeah, like, no matter how we got there, I don't know how long it took. I'm trying to like piece together the years here, but like, yeah, it's like, it takes time. Like you can't just like show up and, you know, write a song. But I mean, some of those ones we did towards the end were really cool actually. And particularly for the time too, I hear all sorts of like influences. Cause you know, then I was like really listening to music and like, you know, checking out different bands and having our own take on something.
There was not a lot of punk people then.
Yeah.
Like you could count them. You could count them on one hand. And so I was a freshman, so I was a lot younger than the rest of you all and that first band. And Alyssa, I guess, told you that she knew a guy that played guitar, and you guys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Luckily, you all let me come jam with you, and we synced up. Luckily.
Yeah, that's right. Go ahead, Ben.
It was just a small world then. It was. Like there was not a lot of, like, where we grew up, there was not much of a scene or anything. We were like. If you saw someone else who was, like, vaguely punk, you immediately gravitated towards them.
Did you guys all go to the same high school at one time or
yes.
another?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess
at various times, yeah.
Right. I was there with Ben at Wakefield. We all went to Wakefield. Ben is, like, the sort of link. He was there when I was there, and he was there when Andy was there, but I wasn't there when Andy was there. But I met Andy shortly after, I guess, because what were you in, like, you were a freshman then, or? I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think when I first started playing with, yeah, I think I was a freshman.
Yeah.
I'm trying to.
Yeah, that's nuts. It's just nuts to me now.
Yeah.
It blows my mind. And I really had that same experience listening to that stuff. I'm like, oh, you know, like, actually, that was pretty good. I mean, I really it felt really good at the time, and I remember it fondly. But I kind of have a little bit of a story about my musical self, which isn't, like, totally untrue, but I'm kind of like, I think to make peace with the ending of each band, I feel like, oh, but this next one, I've developed so much more. And really, like, listening back to that stuff, I'm like, you know what? It's just all different. Yeah, so it was just really, yeah, it was really cool and kind of funny to think about how young we all were, because I think I did that band was, I think I was like 18 through 22 or something like that when we were playing together.
From our entire time with the two bands?
With the two bands, then it was like, I guess I was 17 or 6, was I 6? No.
Like,
17, unless...
Time just went by so much slower.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
I dug through all of my old junk to find tapes for this, because none of us had listened to this stuff in decades. And I found the tape of Lily and I's first band, Idiosyncrasy, and it's handwritten, but it says copyright 1992 on it.
Wow.
And then
I like that you copyrighted it too.
I know, right? No, quote unquote.
Or did you just write that?
No, we didn't copyright it.
Yeah. And then,
that's awesome.
And then the tape that that is still in the release. It was released in 95. And then I also had a Master of the second tape that we never actually did release that was recorded in 96. So,
oh, wow, just, yeah.
It was just like 4 years, but it, like it seemed like, you know, like a huge,
mm-hmm.
It seemed like a huge part of my life, but things just move so much slower then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I've been in a bunch of bands since then, and they, you know, a band might stretch on for 5 years, but I'm like, oh yeah, I was in that band for a couple of years, and it doesn't.
Right.
It's not as important because it wasn't during like my formative years. So like 5 years just kind of goes by like that, where like 2 years when I was just starting out, when it was like all in, it seemed like an eternity.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the scene that you guys were coming out of? Like, what were the other bands that were kind of around that everybody was going to see? What were kind of the venues that everybody liked to go to?
There was none.
Well,
That's not true, though.
I mean, for me, like, I started going to shows, I think when I was, like, about 13 or something like that. I just would, like, hop on the metro and go into, like, the city. Like, I'd go to Old 930, like, DC Space, and, you know, just, or, like, you know, Fort Reno, and what else? I mean, just, like, Black Cat, of course, eventually. But, you know, and all the Positive Force shows. That was like,
mm-hmm.
I was
Positive
like
Force.
All over those for a long, yeah. So I actually, by the time I started the band with Ben, I was pretty like, yeah. I mean, I guess if you're thinking in terms of Arlington proper,
right.
I don't
right.
remember
yeah.
there being a lot going on, but
yeah.
certainly, I mean, it felt like a great place to come of age, honestly, like musically at that time. And like, you know, so I mean, I felt like there was really, like, really a lot happening. But, yeah, when you're thinking about, like, our high school, yeah. I mean, it's like Ben
yeah.
said, if you, you know, you saw one punk, you were, like, just, like, hey, who are you? You know,
yeah.
like, we're going to be instant friends.
Lily took
right.
me to my first, like, show.
I did.
I guess, yeah, and I don't know if you remember this, but we went and saw Amanda McKay's band at a church, like,
sanctuary, maybe.
It was a church in Arlington, right by the Virginia
oh,
Metro.
Huh.
And
oh, yeah.
And it was like my first experience like that. And there was a mosh pit. I got knocked down because I was like 13 years old or something. And like some huge skinhead picked me up and put me on his shoulders and like swung me around. And I thought, like, this is like. This is it. This is my tribe. Like, this is
oh yeah,
just, like, kind of awesome. Like, people are just, like, having a good time. They're getting kind of aggressive, but they're looking out for, like, each other. And, yeah, that was fun. And it was, I kind of wanted to be a part of that. But, we didn't have a lot of peers that we were, like, also in school with that were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
No, we didn't have people in school with us doing a lot of the same. You know, there were no, like, bands in Arlington that I can remember that, you know, we were playing with necessarily. But I'm trying to think of, like, the context of this podcast, because I've listened to a couple of them, like, with Billups.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play in the band with Billups and Charlie. And one of the places that sticks out to me for Northern Virginia is Dharma Coffee House.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was, like, kind of, like, because... That, I mean, it's not Arlington, but it's Northern Virginia, and that at the time, you know, you could just, it was an all-ages space because it's a coffee shop, so, I mean, a lot of people I know from, like, now, and, you know, like, said that they saw us play at a particular show at Dharma Coffee House or something, because I know we played there at least 2 times, maybe 3
yeah.
times.
I
have a bad memory with
I wish I kept
with certain shows, but I definitely like remember playing, you know, places through my life and like the times I've lost. But but definitely we played there a decent amount. So that's like a number one place for Northern Virginia that I'm sure you've had people on this podcast talk about. But
I remember
I had Chris on, and Chris is the guy that Chris Jackson started Dharma Coffee House.
Okay.
and he tells the story of basically like starting it up. So if you go check out that episode, he was
Definitely will.
He's a guitar player from the Vehicle Birth.
Okay.
Oh right, yeah. Right. Yeah. You know what
I remember
funny
playing
about
with that band once. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know what was funny? I just remembered when you're talking about Dharma. I think it was probably the first time we ever played there. so I'd forgotten this detail. So, I had gone for like a semester out at George Mason. And then I dropped out and I was like, I just want to play music and I don't really like this school that much. But in the meantime, I was like, I was in touch with Ben, and Ben, I guess at that time, like John, their old, was John playing bass for you guys or guitar?
I don't remember.
Anyway,
I think he played bass, but, you know,
okay.
It was pretty loose at the time, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ben is all like, hey, do you want to play bass in this band? And I was like, yeah, okay, here's the deal. Like, how about I do that and we get the old band back together in some form? So there was a brief period of time that Ben and I were doing our old band, Idiosyncrasy. And then we were doing Dennis Dillinger. And so actually I remember, it's so crazy, that show – Idiosyncrasy opened up for Dennis Dillinger. So
yeah, we had Nate Burke play bass.
Oh, that's right. Nate was playing bass. And then, Kyle was playing drums at the time.
God, that is so weird.
He was so unreliable. I mean, and actually, I just really, the more that Dennis Dillinger started to play together, the more I was just like, forget it. Like, you know, that was cool. I did this thing in high school, but I was like, it was really clear to me where the magic was, and it was Dennis Dillinger. So we just kind of dropped the other project at that point.
That's a really eclectic mishmash of people, though, with you and Nathan and Kyle. Like, I forgot about that. That is I don't know how we got all four of us in the same place to jam.
That
is weird.
I forgot about Nate, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did the name Dennis Dillinger come from?
Well, it's from Reservoir Dogs. I will give credit for the name to John Vick, the guy who left.
That's right.
we wrote a song called Dennis Dillinger. He was a total movie buff and told me about that movie.
And he sounded exactly like Quentin Tarantino. If you close your eyes and heard this guy talk, he sounded exactly fucking like him. It was crazy.
Yeah, he's got the same voice.
Joe, I don't know what you think you know, but you're wrong.
Like hell I am.
Joe, trust me on this. You've made a mistake. He's a good kid. I understand you're hot. You're super fucking pissed. We're all real emotional, but you're barking up the wrong tree. I know this man. He wouldn't do that.
You don't know jack shit. I do. The cocksucker that tipped off the cops and a Mr. Brown and Mr. Blue killed.
Mr. Blue is dead?
Dead as Dillinger.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's just, I mean, in 1993 or whatever, I had not heard of that movie. It was a little bit underground for a high school kid. And John was way into it. He named us.
That's one of my favorites ever. I was hoping that it came from Reservoir. I didn't know.
Yeah, I had to go watch the movie after we named the band.
When did you guys actually start writing your own songs? Were you writing them like from the get-go, or were you doing covers initially?
Yeah, from the get-go. I don't know about you all, but I cannot play covers.
We used to do a cover, Ben. We did do a cover.
What was it?
We did one cover, I remember. I don't know if we ever played it live. We probably did. We did the... it's funny, I remember this. We did the cover of it's a Smith song. We did
You're right. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, and I played like the 12-string guitar.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Do you remember that? We definitely didn't record it, but we might have played it live. I bet.
We played it live at least once, maybe a couple times. In general, I'm not a. You know, I don't have anything against covers, but for me, like from the beginning, like. Playing music was really about like I really wanted to get my own sort of expression out there, and like, you know, that creative process was like really important to me, so I just really didn't ever have much of an interest in doing covers, and I've done them here and there over the years, like one or two, kind of like what you're talking about, Andy, but been particularly interested.
I think it was just something about like I think one of our songs, I think it was I Dreamt, is off of Trigger Happy. When I listen back to it, I'm like, yeah, this kind of has like this like Smith like feel to it or something. It's got this Smith bop, and I'm like, oh, it kind of made sense. We ended up doing a Smith cover. But I mean, Ben's right. We, you know, all the stuff that him and Lily wrote was always just from them. It wasn't really from anywhere else. You know, we didn't ever try to do covers. That was just like the one that ended up like working or something for us for whatever reason. But
I am not a good guitar player, and I do not play other people's music very well. I've done covers in a couple of bands, and they just sound nothing like what they're supposed to sound like.
I think a good cover is like the way, like, you know, Cat Power, if you've ever listened to that covers album, like when I heard that, I was like, that's a cover, you know, you're just doing something so different. It's sort of like a jumping off point almost, rather than like an homage.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you guys write together? What was your process for coming up with your songs?
I don't know. I've been thinking about that because I've noticed you've asked that of a couple of people. I've listened to a couple of the shows. And I think what I just remember from listening, just from the last couple of days listening to this old material, that I think me and Lily just had a really nice chemistry.
Yeah.
I think
or the other of us would, come in with the bare bones of an idea and we just jam it out is what I remember.
Yeah, like Lily's not a typical bass player. She plays very, I'm totally.
I think I play it more melodically.
You're melodic. That's melodic, the M word I was looking for, exactly. Yeah, so we really kind of hit it off. You played more like, it was like jamming with another guitarist, but we had a nice like bottom end to kind of round things out. So I just feel like we had a really good chemistry going on.
Yeah, for sure.
Played off each
all
other.
All three,
Yeah.
I mean, for me, too, it's like I felt like I got to sit, like, right at this apex of, Andy's very, like, phenomenal drumming and, like, Ben's, like, creativity and just, got to really riff off of that. It was a pretty cool experience.
How did you guys go about recording?
We were trying to figure that out this week too.
Yeah.
We were like,
"Well,
the first one, what happened? Like, who recorded this?"
Yeah, just to lay it out there. Me and Andy got together last week and tried to hash it out, trying to remember where and when we recorded stuff. And the only thing I really remember is recording with Christian for our second album, which we never released. The first stuff, it is written down, we recorded at a couple of places, and I don't remember it.
Yeah, I remember the first one. I mean, not really. I remember it being, definitely it was in Arlington. It was in some middle-aged dude's basement. It was, like, when I think back on it now, I'm like, it's like the beginning of, like, a horror movie or, like, some kind of slasher thing, because I'm just like, this dude that was so, like, kind of in his pajamas practically and, like, just kind of bored. And, I could tell he didn't really take us very seriously. And when I listen to this stuff, I'm kind of like, well.
We got something on tape.
Okay, I can understand why.
You know what's really weird is that I can remember, like, our first band with Idiosyncrasy when we recorded at Key of Process. I can remember that place. Like, I can remember minute details about his place. And then I can remember recording with Andy and John Vick at this weird guy in Westover's house who lived in his mom's basement and had a Kathy Ireland.
That was the same
calendar.
Guy. That might have been the same guy.
So I was going to say that, Ben. Yeah, I was going to say that. So the tape you brought over last week, when the tape of you, me, and John, like those two, like total like instrumental songs, it's the same place as those WTF songs we were talking about. Like, it's the same place. That guy lived behind Westover in that neighborhood in Arlington.
Yeah.
He lived with his parents or something. He's probably trying to pay the electricity bill with the, I don't know, like what the deal was. But like,
where was Trigger Happy though? I mean, that was like, what's so weird?
So,
that's the one
I know
we actually
that one.
Released. Oh, you do?
That one. So that one we recorded with, I know the guy's name. His name is Scott McKnight. And he was an Arlington singer-songwriter guy. The reason we ended up there was because when I was taking drum lessons, my drum teacher got me to, like, play some songs in the studio for that guy's, like, solo stuff. And so I did, like, two songs or a song or something like that. And I was just like, oh, this guy's got a studio. And then, like, oh, great. And then, awesome. It's just, like, a studio.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, it doesn't really equate to great recording. But it's just a person that can put it down. So, I mean, it was just, like, a place. And unfortunately, like, that's the thing. Those songs on Trigger Happy are really cool. They're good songs, and we definitely played them a ton. And I think those are the ones that I feel like we really called our own, but unfortunately mm-hmm. they suffer from this person just, you know, doesn't, you know, I certainly didn't know how to tune drums properly then, and that guy didn't
right.
either, so, or didn't give a fuck
right.
or whatever. So, like, I mean, it just kind of, that's how it is, so.
It's not that bad.
Unfortunately, we got a bad, yeah.
It's not that bad except for my singing. The vocals are absolutely horrendous and embarrassing, but the...
No, man, no,
the,
I love your vocals.
The musicianship is pretty good, and it's just kind
yeah.
of a it's kind of a washy, bland recording, but
the levels are wrong.
I really
it's from an engengineering standpoint, it's not good. Like, it's not just your vocals.
Yeah. Well,
like,
now that I know,
like,
he's like the
yeah.
singer or songwriter, I'm like, we got in there, he probably didn't know what the hell to do.
He didn't know what to do with it. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like all that fucking feedback and, you know, distortions and, like,
well,
I probably
insisted on that.
I was actually going to say I love the use of feedback and distortion.
I mean, it's cool. It's just some of it gets muddy along the way if you listen
yeah,
to it.
True.
And I'm just like, God, like, even Trigger Happy, I like that song a lot. It's a cool song. But if you listen to it, it gets so feedbacky and crazy. You don't even know which way is up when you're listening to it.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool in a way, like in a My Bloody Valentine kind of way. I don't,
yeah.
But, like, it just ends up sounding like, where is this going? I have no clue how to get out of this hole.
I will admit that that's all my fault, because I've been driving engineers and sound guys nuts for 25 years at this point. Like, I
blame
exactly.
you.
I can't tell you,
know you
how many times people just told me to please turn the amp down, and I'm like, no, I can't turn
that.
The amp down, because it sounds better when you have it up loud, because you're pushing
yeah.
your volume out, and you don't understand my tone, man, and I'm not turning it down. And I've been fighting that battle for 25 years, and I might be wrong, but
you might be, but I love that, and I love being able to feel the guitar. And actually, the thing is, with, I mean, like, literally feel it in my body, right? Like, that's
exactly.
part of what I love about playing with you guys. And I actually, one of the problems with Trigger Happy, I remember when I was listening to it, is that something happened in the recording process where the drums got dropped. They got erased in that part that you're talking about. And it, like, some of the drugs mics or whatever.
It does snap in and out, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. It, you know, it's just the kick and, like, the it's like whatever's coming off of, like, some room mic or I don't know what. But, like, there's a part, I remember this distinctly because we were like, no, you know, like, and we just didn't have time to, or money probably to keep doing it. So
yeah,
that's part of it.
Everything costs materials then, which is totally different than now because.
Oh, yeah.
You had to, like, put stuff on physical tape instead of putting it on a hard drive that you erase and recopy over a million times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I can remember a lot of things where I wanted to do stuff and it was like, well, you got to buy more tape for that.
Right. Oh my God. Right. You'd be like, can I do this last song? And it's like, how much tape do we have left?
Yeah.
I totally forgot. And then you'd be like,
so
oh shit, I guess we can't record that.
Expensive.
We can't record
yeah.
that song. Oh my God.
What are we going to do?
Yeah. Yep. It's so yeah. funny though, because it's like, you have on the one hand, it was so much harder to record. It was harder to disseminate stuff. But I kind of wonder about the sort of modern moment. Like we have this sort of reverse problem, which is like, I think there's so much out there, that like, it's like sort of like there's too much choice. And then I think like new bands have a hard time. They're just lost in this sea of all the people who can put their music out, which is like everybody. So it's kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. Kind of the balance shifted so far the other direction in a way.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely.
I think the bigger problem is that the kids aren't forming bands.
Mm.
There just aren't that many like bands or, you know, or punk bands coming up these days.
Oh, I have to jump in. Sorry. Kids are forming bands. They're just, but that's what I think what Lily's saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Lily, if I'm not summarizing this correctly, but like, I think the issue is like kids are forming bands, but sometimes like if YouTube is there and everything is there to just say like, here's what happened. Boom. Here's history.
Yeah.
Here's everything.
Yeah.
I can just learn this. I don't need to like have to seek this out at a record store or at a like, you know, just by happenstance, like absorb it from my friend or whatever. And like recording is so easy and everything is just right there. Everything becomes a little too mechanical and a little too like I still freak out about like, think about the band Bad Brains, like Bad Brains like came from like fucking nowhere. And like, I still like hardcore has been around for decades now. And that's what's amazing about that band is that like, even with all the young kids doing stuff and like knowing about that band, they still can't really quite replicate it because there's something about that's just like, you can't watch a million YouTube videos and learn all the scales and all the drum parts and all the technique stuff or like, and be able to do it. Like you can't do that. It doesn't work that way.
Right. Yeah.
But people are still doing band. I mean, like there's tons of young kids doing bands, but there's just too many of them.
There are.
There's so many that you can't even like wrap your head around it. You know,
that's kind of goes along with the population growth. That's exactly what I see in my industry as a photographer. And it's, you know, there's just so many people. There's so many people doing bands. There's so many people being artists today. There's so many people doing everything. And it kind of puts a little bit more pressure on you to be original and just let the cream rise to the top. But
but sometimes really, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Well, but I don't really have a lot of faith in people that are just like aping each other and kind of like following trends. Those trends, they die off and people just need to, people don't have to, I mean, I teach and students are really lucky now that they're not investing, like spending like thousands and thousands of dollars on film anymore because everyone can experiment digitally, but, you have to just keep pushing yourself and not being lazy and keep like trying to get to the next level and trying to do something new instead of just like resting on your laurels because you have gotten to the same level as the other people that you appreciate, the other people that you admire.
Right. Right.
So I think there are lots of bands now that people aren't, they don't have as much of a DIY, what am I trying to say, ethic, because they don't have to do that. They're not like putting their own money in, you know, they're not paying in to like get something out of it. They can just like kind of do it and mess around and see where the chips fall.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's like also like as Andy was talking, I was thinking about how that experience of, you know, being in the record store, like going down to Smash or whatever, and like, just like, you know, kind of flipping through albums. And like, I got so much good music that way. Like even Fugazi, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, maybe I didn't know about them this way, but like certainly it may have been because I remember seeing the cover for Margin Walker, and mm-hmm. it must have been, when did that one come out? I don't know, maybe 89 or something mm-hmm. like that. And I just was like, what is this? You know, like just this weird thing, and you know, or just different experiences like that where I was kind of drawn in by something artistically on the album cover. It's like there were, I don't do this anymore where I just buy something I've never even heard of, just because it's like it strikes me as interesting. And of course, sometimes there does, but it's just not a thing that happens anymore, I think.
Well, that album was given to me on a tape cassette, which is how I kind of got introduced to most stuff. Just because, like, again, you take your influences from the people that you're hanging out with, and that,
sure.
like, and that record just totally blew my mind. And I hadn't gone to the record store and looked for it, but someone
right.
handed it to me, and because someone copied it onto a tape, I was like, huh, I should put some time into this and listen to it, because
mm-hmm.
someone else cared about making sure that
right.
I listened to it. Which is like a lot different than like sharing like a Spotify list or something.
Right.
Today.
Right.
It was like someone was
yeah.
like, hey, you gotta check this out. Like, my musical taste started out as pretty mainstream, and then through skateboarding, someone made me a Sex Pistols tape and then a Ramones tape, and those like totally changed my worldview and changed my mind and like changed what I wanted. And then because I responded to that, people were like, oh yeah, you like the Ramones, well, like, listen to this. And so,
yeah.
like, it was all of these feedings of copy tapes with, like, barely legible scribbled band names on them that kind of influenced me. And I think I just appreciate the effort that goes into making a tape and the effort that goes into listening to something that someone gives you earnestly, which
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like maybe is not there as much today.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I agree.
I definitely don't think
there's
a lot of people. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of people making mixtapes these days. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But
yeah, I don't know what the kids are doing. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
Probably a lot more playlists.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
But I agree with Ben that it's like it's something really. I remember this very distinctly now. Like just getting a mixtape from somebody, or just getting people like recording. You know, making copies, et cetera. And like, yeah, just the idea that, you know, this is something somebody cared about, and like, you like that person, you think they're cool or whatever. And so you're really going to sit there and listen to that. Yeah. I was definitely introduced to a ton of music that way as well.
Yeah. I think I listened to stuff more over and over again back then than I ever do now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because, like you said, I have access to practically, like, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You just want to try to listen to everything. And by doing that, you're constantly listening to new stuff, which is great. But you're not, like, really, really delving into, you know, albums.
Yeah, you're not
sure.
Wearing that.
Right.
You're not wearing that band or that tape out.
Yeah, you know, I was just think I had one of those yellow sports Walkman, and I like, which is good because I definitely was hard on electronic equipment. But I don't remember how I got a hold of Sonic Youth's sister. But I put it in my walk. I really remember like the first time putting it in my Walkman and being like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And just, I think that tape lived in my Walkman for like 3 months straight or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I listened to it constantly, basically.
I mean, that's awesome. That's like, it like brings tears to my eyes to hear you say that. Cause it's like, to know that someone had an experience like that, like, I just wonder if that translates now. If that just comes on your Spotify, like, you're like, oh,
right.
Cool, sister, or evil, or whatever. And you're like, but like one of those things, but it's like going around and just like placing it, like, just like the act of placing it in your Walkman, listening to it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing. Very evocative memory.
I can kind of gush on that tape too, just because it's no lie that I ripped and wanted to be Sonic Youth pretty hard during Dead of Dillinger. But when I was 13 and I was on a cross country trip with my family, and I was listening to my Walkman in California somewhere, and they played Schizophrenia on a college radio station I tuned into. And I was just remember being like, holy crap, what is this? And we were in San Francisco, and we went to like the tourist area, and there was a Tower Records there. And I went in and I bought that tape. And like, I still have the tape. I do not know where the cover is, but I still got the cassette and I've worn that tape out. And I bought the vinyl like years and years and years later, and I probably listened to the vinyl like 5 times, but that tape went through like cars and Walkman like thousands of times probably.
All right, I'll jump in on it, too. I made a movie in college, and the opening song in the movie is Schizophrenia.
Yeah,
oh,
there you go.
Awesome. Oh, my God.
What was the name of the movie? In Hot Water.
Nice.
Awesome. That's great.
You can
find
it.
Killer, powerful song.
Terrible.
But you can find it.
Oh, yeah? Where can I find it?
on my YouTube somewhere.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
All
right. I'll look for it. I'm definitely checking that out. So
that's awesome.
You guys, you said that you did, like, kind of a proper recording with Christian.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, like, that was, that's the one that you took kind of the most time with and really
mm-hmm.
the songs.
Yeah, we never released that recording, though.
Yeah.
What was it like recording it at Stillman?
It was fun. It was Stumble and Fall Then.
Okay.
And it was at the... Was it all at Drum and Strum, or did we do it at his house in Warrington?
We did two. I think there were two. I think we must have recorded it at different parts, at different times, because, well, I mean, not vastly far apart, but I remember recording in one space, at the music shop.
We finished Trigger Happy in Drum and Strum.
Okay, that's it. Yeah.
So we must have done the other album totally in his house, which became Still.
Yes, that's correct.
So maybe
we
his
would stay
maybe,
out there for the weekend.
I thought it was at the music store. I thought it was in the back of the music store.
All of
I
it
could,
was
Trigger Happy maybe.
I can't remember though. Yeah, I
don't remember. I spent a lot of time hanging out with Christian after then. With like other various people, and so I don't know where we recorded exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Christian was great because he was really experimental, and he definitely let me go with like my like Sonic Youth, my Bloody Valentine tendencies, and did all kinds of experimentation, and was pretty fun to work with. I brought in my own gear every time, and I believe I always use my amp, but he always made me use this one Gretsch guitar that I've been like searching for ever since, and I can't remember exactly what it is, but yeah, it was a pretty fun experience. I can honestly say that he's the only engineer who has like kind of dealt with my feedback. Everyone else has been tried to like calm it down, tamp it down, put me in a closet or whatever. And Kristen is like, I don't care. Just like, hang up and do whatever you want. And don't see your amp.
Yeah, he was great. He was, I think he really added something, important to our process and like had some creative ideas. I mean, he didn't really, not in this, in terms of songwriting per se, but definitely in terms of like adding little elements engineering wise. And I don't know. I felt like, bottom line, he like got us and he took us seriously. And he really like, I feel like brought out some good stuff, in our sound.
He helped us like develop our dynamics too, because like listening to the two recordings, the tape is pretty much just like full force.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit more like soft loud with Christian. And I think like that's where I started learning to like yell more. Like I've never been happy with my vocals, but at least I was like, opening up a little bit more with Christian, and and he was able to bring out like a little bit soft loud with us instead of it just being just one volume throughout the whole entire thing. And I think I remember that translating, like me taking that to our shows after recording with them for the I think we only probably played for another year after recording with them tops, but I think I remember that influencing my thinking of like, oh, I need to add some dynamics into our songs, not just go full volume the whole entire time, like try to create a little bit more of like a dynamic sound range.
How come those recordings never saw the light of day?
I think we broke up. One song was on the Generalissimo comp.
Oh yeah, which one was that? I forgot all about that.
Submit to Me was on.
Oh yeah, I love that song.
Yeah, but yeah. I think we just broke up, and so Bill never put it out because we quit playing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, we didn't really break up. We just kind of
stopped. I went to college. I basically decided to go back to school and in Annapolis, and I thought, this will be close enough to DC that we can keep playing together. But you know, it was a really tough program where I went, and then you know, sort of like along those lines. I think we've actually played one show. We played one show up at St. John's, and then we played, I think maybe a show at that bar that was right around the corner from where I lived with you, Ben, on U Street. Like, it was like a little, like a Rasta bar. Or so, I don't even
Coffee
remember.
House?
Like,
Coffee House.
Yeah, Coffee House. So we played that. That might have been our last show ever. So it was never like, I think we just, it just drifted apart after that just because we couldn't, this wasn't possible to keep it going. Because I think we were always really good about rehearsing. We rehearsed multiple times per week. We were like, I was not one of these bands where it's like, was hard to get us together to rehearse. But I think once we didn't have that consistency, it just kind of got loose after that. And then, it was never like a formal thing.
We may not have had a consistent rehearsal space at that point.
Right.
Like it
that might have been part of the problem.
In my parents' basement. And then my first apartment was with you, Lily.
That's right.
And we practiced there above the dentist's office, which was kind of mind blowing how we got away with practicing in an apartment. Like, luckily, the neighbors were cool with it.
It was Mr. Phil from 930 Club lived next door to us. And it was in the old space, the old Go Records or Go CDs or whatever was like we took over their space or something like that. We lived basically in the Go CD shop.
Yeah.
And then above Sugar Shack. So when the dentist wasn't there, we could like kind of jam.
Yeah. I remember jamming once when they were there in the weekend doing something, and the woman Barbara came up to yell at us because it was, our stereo was entirely too loud.
Stereo. I also had a dog in that apartment. There was not supposed to be a pet, and I would like sneak the dog out, to, like run her out.
That's hilarious.
Sometimes she'd be like looking in the window, and we'd like fuck. But he never figured it out.
I remember telling her that we had a big cat.
A big cat. Really big cat.
Yeah.
That's
but I don't remember when you practiced after that, so that might have kind of... Because you went to school, and then and then I had someone else move in with me, and I don't remember what happened then, so...
Mm.
Yeah, I think it just kind of dissolved after that, honestly. Like, there wasn't really, like, us, you know, I think a lot of bands sometimes don't even really have, like, a finite, like, oh, well, that's the date it all ended. But, you know, I think with the case of Dead as Dillinger, it just kind of, like, dissolved. I do want to say I don't even know if Billups was, like, putting out stuff actively at that time, even, like, maybe. Like, he might have been, like, kind of done, you know. Generalissimo or Victrola or whatever. I mean, it just, I don't know how many releases, you know, he did a couple releases, but I don't necessarily know that he was like, had the capital to just go ahead and do another release. So it wasn't necessarily like, you know, like that was like on the table either. So I just think like, you know, we wanted to document what we did, and I'm glad we did, because when I listened back to it this week, I was pleasantly surprised. But, like, it was just kind of one of those things where, like, the things, you know, as Lily used the verb earlier, adulting, like, you know, like Lily, like having other changes in life, and like us, like, not really, you know, the band not really, like, you know, conceding to those and adapting to those, and mm-hmm. and that's how it goes, unfortunately, for lots of bands. And it's just like, that's just kind of when you know, like, your time is up here. And I think that's just kind of like the natural progression of things. I think
I don't think there's
any like hard feelings or anything.
No,
like that.
There was definitely no hard feelings.
Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, I sometimes feel like, or, you know, like, kind of like wonder about, well, what if I'd put off school for a couple of years, or like,
no, you can't.
You know, I know. I mean, and I made, you know, it's a decision I made, and I definitely, like, that experience going to that particular college was like amazing, but. But I, you know, I am kind of like, maybe it's like, I just wanted to kind of see where we have gone just a little bit, kind of a little bit further, you know, like, just especially now I have that thought again, listening back to this stuff and thinking, oh man, it's like, what if we just kind of done a little bit more, you know, and like, what would that have sounded like? And just kind of curious about it more than anything.
Yeah. I know what you mean, because I kind of dropped out of music for a while after that, because I wanted to focus on career. And, you know, I just kind of missed a crummy section of music. So I'm not really that like, in the grand scheme of things, I started playing music. I started playing music again, and I'm not, and it's always just been a fun outlet. It's not what I'm trying to do. It's just a fun creative outlet, and I don't mind missing the early 2000s.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
I don't know. I thought the early 2000s had some good rock going on.
That's when I turned backwards.
I like that period. It was the late 90s was pretty bad. And almost the whole last decade has been fairly bad, but early to mid 90s and the early 2000s, I think we're good.
Yeah. That's when I think I took like 10 years off for the most part, and I don't feel like I missed much. I did fill in on Shoutbus for a year or two, which was fun, but I do remember just every show we played sitting in the van waiting for the other bands to finish playing. not to be a crank, but
isn't that fun?
Just wasn't into it.
It's
like, it's a matter of taste. Like, I'm trying to remember, because I went to school, and when I got back, I was like, oh, maybe that was just all in the past, music stuff. But then it's like, I came back to DC, and I was like, kind of got, you know, I ended up playing with Nima and Chuck from Ugly, Monsoon. And it was like, yeah, I liked playing with those guys a lot. Yeah, that was cool stuff. But I'm trying to remember who we were playing with at that time. Because that was about 2000, 2001 or something like that.
Was it that long ago?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's when we started. I think we went to about 2003, because 2004 I moved out to San Francisco right after Monsoon broke up. I was just like, I'm done, I'm gonna go try to do something out west instead. I really have set up a lot of my life post Monsoon to try to like keep playing music and make some kind of go of it, and I honestly, like, for better or for worse, just recently I'm like, okay, this is never going to be a career, period. But I'm going to keep doing it, but it's just going to be in a different, it's going to hold a different place in my life now. Right. Yeah.
What is Monsoon?
Oh, it was a band. It was like a, you know, kind of like more indie rock sound, but it was Chuck Campbell, who played with Ugly, played drums for Ugly, and then I don't know if you know Nima Maj. He was kind of a solo, he did a lot of solo, like, singer-songwriter-y type stuff. What was that place that they used to play out in Fairfax? He would open up for Ugly. Cousins. Yeah. So he would open up for Ugly, and then he went to, well, where did he go? He went to, like, France for a while, and he had, like, a solo album that a French label put out, and then he came back to the States, and, you know, he was hooked in with Charlie and Chuck and all those folks, and that's kind of how he got connected up with me. I feel like somebody put us in contact, and then that was it. I was like, after that, because I was kind of like, well, I guess I sold my soul to rock and roll. I was like, I guess I'm going to do this thing again. And it was fun playing with them. I thought we did some cool stuff.
Yeah, well, Chuck is awesome.
He's great to play. I feel like I've been very blessed in my musical life. Like, the drummers I've played with have pretty much, I'm very picky now about drummers. It's kind of a problem.
Andy spoiled us young.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally.
Oh, stop.
Well, I got
you guys.
I love Shoutbus also. Like, Shoutbus.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, Shoutbus is great.
You guys are rad and doing, you know, it's like Northern Virginia's answer to the Minutemen.
Yeah,
kind of totally. Were.
Yeah. It's awesome.
On a bass. That was fun.
So what were the highlights like in terms of the band? Did you guys ever play the music store? Did you ever get a chance to go into D.C. and play any of those places, Lily, that you had been going to when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. Like, pretty much, we got to do a lot. I feel we got really a lot of cool shows. We played the old 930. We played Black Cat. We played, maybe played Sanctuary. I'm trying to remember. We played
Rear Places. Asylum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that right. The old Asylum, yeah. And what else? We played this VFW hall. I just found a picture from it. We opened for Avail, I think, there.
Yeah.
In Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
And we did some cool openers, too. We opened for Pansy Division, which is like a young queer kid. That was really fun for me. I was never super into Pansy Division in terms of, like, their sound, but I, like, thought they were great, and they're probably one of the nicest bands we ever played with. We opened for Joan Jett at one point.
That was a weird
Nation too. That was a big place.
That was
really weird because that was kind of before Joan Jett hit her like renaissance again.
Yeah.
You know, like
I remember
it was kind of like she was beginning to get hip again, but it was basically like a little bit of a lull in her career, but like I remember like it was pretty much just bikers and and like there were a fair amount of lesbians there, and it was pretty cool. Like it was awesome. I mean,
like,
but it was just like it was just like it was totally cool, and I remember she was really nice, and I remember a lot of people like coming and signing, like wanting her to sign their records and stuff. And she was like super sweet and did all that. And I'm just saying like, it was like at a period of her career where she was kind of in the middle, it seems, but like, it was cool. It was a really cool show. That was a really awesome, that was a highlight for me. Definitely.
Yeah. That was a good show.
Absolutely. We played we actually played the Mountain Lodge with Vehicle Birth once.
Right.
I remember that show very specifically.
Did we just play one time there?
We just played one time.
We played a couple times, maybe.
I thought we just played once, but I remember that show was really bananas because, but like, this place was so crazy. Like, have you heard about that place? I'm asking the interviewer. You heard about the Mountain Lodge?
In
Georgetown. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, I mean,
It was crazy because I remember they were serving alcohol to children. It was absolutely right. I was 15 years old. I was 15 years old and I was drinking there. It was like the most insane thing I ever like experienced. Like the fact that you could just do that. I mean, it was absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
That was with vehicle birth?
That was with vehicle birth, yeah.
I remember the like military dude picking us up and making
play
the same song 3 times in a row.
That's right. Oh my god, I totally forgot about
you're all ain't done.
Yeah, the heyday of Georgetown where there's like just these, it was like punks and like Marines.
Military.
It's such
people,
a weird
So you know, in terms of you guys coming from, I always ask everybody, you know, about Northern Virginia and growing up in Northern Virginia and being, you know, sort of right outside of D.C. How do you think that shaped you guys as musicians and as a band?
Well, there's a pretty heavy discourse presence. I mean, but I don't think I ever thought that we were going to be Discord. I think we were just really looking for shows, honestly. like, I remember our first show was with my my high school photo teacher's band. And that was... That was at the Grog and Tankard. And, and it was just because we wanted shows. Like, we did not We did not know how any of that worked, and we knew about the Discord thing, and we thought, like, Fort Reno was probably, like, about as big as you could make it in D.C., and, like, we never had any hope of, like, playing Fort Reno, but that was kind of, I mean, that's personally what I thought, what I saw, and I think that's kind of cool, like, we were raised that way, where we're seeing, like, Fort Reno and Positive Force shows and stuff as, like, the apex of our scene. So but yeah, I don't know, but I think we're just kind of trying to figure out how do we get up to that point, and like how do we get shows, and who will let us play a show with them. And that was pretty much up. I remember playing Dartmouth for the first time, and that was like probably our first show out in Fairfax, and being like, well, there's a lot of kids out here. This is kind of weird. Like, there's not this many kids where we're from, and it's kind of cool. But we never made it out to any of those We never kind of got in with that scene.
Yeah, I think for me, it like just starting to go to shows so young. I think it had a pretty big impact on me. Especially in terms of not so much sound wise, although certainly it's impossible not to be influenced by some of that stuff. And I think you can hear it. I think I always had like kind of a different approach to what I wanted to play, like sound wise, but the sense of possibility that comes from the kind of scene that DC was, I can't even overestimate it. It just really, like, I was like, oh, I can, I mean, this is like the story of a million hardcore kids, but it's like, oh, I can do this. Wait, this is like something I can do too. And this is like the sort of egalitarian nature of the whole scene really inspired me a lot. And I think, you know, allowed me to just kind of dream big/small. I mean, it's kind of like what Ben said. It's like, but we didn't want anything more than that. Like, I mean, yeah, I think I always had some idea I'd like to tour a little. But, you know, other than that, I was like, I'd be happy to play Fort Reno, and I feel like this is awesome, you know, like that kind of thing.
Like, I remember playing with one of our first bands last season in Blagden Alley with a Positive Force show, and I was like,
oh yeah,
this is kind of like the apex for playing for Positive Force. And Mark Anderson just like did a speech before we went on, and like
we've
kind of arrived, and this is cool. Like, I was never, you know, I think we just kind of wanted to, you know, just like have an outlet for our expression and
yeah.
try to, you know, we weren't really, we obviously weren't in it for the money. Hopefully no one's in it for the money.
No.
But yeah, we were just like, you know, we just kind of thought that that was a cool scene to latch onto. We were, I mean, there were other scenes we could have latched onto if we were into other kinds of music, but yeah, I think that it's, we're kind of came up in a good environment and had honorable expectations because of it.